one in particular in connection with the murder of Cora Wakes. But, Matt asked, certain the inspector was holding something back. I believe Mr. Fargen may have been attempting to convince certain people that he knew they were involved with Cora's death, and possibly that he had seen something when Mr. Blass was killed. A most dangerous game to play with a murderer.
Blackmail, breathed Kitty.
He clearly hit the target with one of his victims. The question is which one? We suspect that one of them was Vivian Delaware, and she was out and about unusually early this morning. Her husband Bobby also doesn't appear to have an alibi. Matt took a sip of tea.
Mr. Fargen could have seen Colin Wakes, too, if it transpires that Colin is the person sleeping in the old smuggler's tunnel. He knew Colin and didn't think well of him, Kitty added.
There is still no trace of this Mr. Kelly or of Edgar Underhay, and no definite confirmation that they are one and the same person.
Inspector Greville looked at Matt.
Indeed, we only have Miss Delaware's assertion that Edgar Underhay is possibly in Dartmouth or even in England at all.
He helped himself to a biscuit.
I take it you wish to interview Miss Delaware and her husband. May I ask you for the use of your grandmother's suite, Miss Underhay? It would be more conducive to obtaining a good result, I feel, rather than asking them to come to the police station.
Of course, Inspector. I would only ask that you remember that Miss Delaware is my guest, and I need her for the masked ball next Saturday. The Dolphin has invested heavily in Miss Delaware to launch our summer season.
Matt noticed Kitty's hand stray towards the pocket of her cardigan. Certainly, miss. I will be entirely cordial until there is some conclusive evidence against her. And for your peace of mind, I have a man stationed out of sight at the back of the hotel, observing the entrance to the tunnels. I'm hopeful we will apprehend whoever is sleeping in there very soon.
Kitty smiled. Thank you, Inspector. That does make me feel safer. I'll call downstairs and ask if Miss Delaware and her husband are free to see you, and I'll arrange for some more tea to be sent up.
She looked meaningfully at the empty biscuit plate. Thank you, Miss Underhay. That's very thoughtful of you. Captain Bryant, could I trouble you to stay for the interviews? My resources are somewhat stretched at present, and having another person present would be most helpful.
Matt saw the spark of annoyance in Kitty's eyes at being excluded. However, she merely smiled once more, collected the tray, and left the suite. Kitty made her way down the stairs to the back office behind the reception desk. The ruby in her pocket nestled against her hip. She tried to think through the ramifications of its discovery. What should she do with it? If anyone found out she had it, her life would be in danger. Although after everything that had happened today, she was probably already in peril. She couldn't see that giving it to the police would solve anything either, but she couldn't keep something that was stolen. Perhaps she should have given it to the inspector, but everything had happened so quickly. It was also the only link she had that might enable her to discover what had happened in the past with her father and mother. She took over from the girl on the reception desk so she could go for a tea break. It was better to be occupied so her mind wouldn't keep dwelling on the day's events. She was unsurprised when the telephone rang and her grandmother was on the line.
Darling, I just had a call from one of the girls. Is it true? Has Herbert Fargen been murdered?
Yes, Grams. They found him in his booth this morning. Matt was with the inspector when the alarm was raised. She might have guessed one of her grandmother's friends would call her. Even with the ringleader, Mrs. Craven, out of action, the rest of the town's matrons were still on patrol.
What are the police doing about it? Are you safe?
Inspector Greville is here now, Grams, talking to suspects. Please don't worry, we are all quite safe.
I do hope they're not guests. The hotel does not want a reputation for harbouring murderers.
Her grandmother sounded indignant. Grams, it is quite scary here at the moment, but nothing that can affect the guests. She couldn't tell her grandmother about the burglar in her room or the intruder in the tunnels. Where is Captain Bryant? Her grandmother demanded. He's with the inspector. I promise he is keeping an eye on me.
Oh, my dear, I've never known anything like it. Get Matthew to telephone me as soon as he is free. Have you received any more letters or heard anything further about your father?
Kitty sighed. No, Grams, nothing. I promise I'll ask Matt to update you on everything once he's finished with the inspector.
I have some good news for you, at least. Livy and I are coming back soon. She is seeing the doctor tomorrow, and I'm very hopeful he will say she is fit to travel.
Kitty's spirits lifted.
That would be lovely, Grams. I can't wait to see you both. Do you think you may be here in time for the masked ball next Saturday? I'm not sure, my dear. It depends on Livy. We shall have to break the journey, as I fear being in the car too long might be too much for her. We shall do our best, though. Promise me you will do as Matt asks and stay safe, Kitty.
I will, Grams, don't worry. Speaking to her grandmother had lifted her mood. Perhaps when she returned, she would know what the best thing would be to do with the ruby. Though she was tempted, she had held back from saying anything on the telephone for fear of being overheard. No sooner had she replaced the handset than her mood was sent spiraling downwards at speed by the unwelcome sight of Walter Cribbs on the other side of the reception desk. Chapter 20. Mr. Cribbs. She struggled not to wrinkle her nose in distaste, trying to maintain her professional manner.
The lovely Miss Underhay.
Walter appeared very pleased with himself.
How may I assist you, Mr. Cribbs? Walter, please. We've known each other long enough to dispense with formalities, surely.
Are you here to report on the upcoming masked ball? Kitty inquired.
I am always delighted to report events at the Dolphin, Kitty. But with the terrible murder of Mr. Fargin earlier today, I am merely following up leads.
Kitty knew she was going to regret asking, but did it anyway.
And why would that bring you to the Dolphin Hotel?
An ingratiating smirk spread across Walter's face, revealing yellow, uneven teeth.
Just a hunch. Inspector Greville keeps returning here, so it has me wondering whether there's a link between the murders and the Dolphin. Oh, and of course, the rumours of the fabulous jewel.
Inspector Greville must have other business besides the murders, and rumours of a jewel are just rumours.
I fear you are wasting your time, Mr. Cribbs, and I'll thank you not to print libelous material in your rag.
Walter's smirk grew bigger.
Really? Then what about the story of how your room was burgled earlier today?
Who had he been talking to? Gossip always spread like wildfire in a small town, and Alice, the young maid who had discovered the break-in, would easily be persuaded to talk. Dartmouth must be becoming a veritable hotbed of crime.
Does nothing happen in Torquay or Newton Abbot lately? Was anything of value taken during the robbery? Do you think the thief was searching for the jewel? Why is there a policeman in the hotel kitchen?
Walter pushed his face closer to hers. His notepad and pencil were poised to scribble down her responses.
I have nothing to say, Mr. Cribbs. You really are wasting your time. Nothing of any value has been stolen. Once again, there is no jewel.
We have very good security at the hotel, and the officer in the kitchen is taking statements about the fire. Kitty tried to keep her tone light, refusing to give him the satisfaction of trying to rattle her nerves. She would need to have a talk with the staff and remind them not to be talking out of turn. Walter slid his notepad back into his pocket, giving her what she supposed he thought was a winning smile.
Maybe we should talk about the masked ball instead. It promises to be quite an event. I shall, of course, be covering it for the society column. I do hope you'll keep a dance or two free for me.
Kitty thought hell would probably freeze over before that happened.
I doubt I'll have time for dancing. There is a lot of work to ensure the success of such big events.
Walter tittered, the high-pitched sound grating on her.
All work and no play will make Kitty a dull girl.
I'm sure you'll be working hard too, she remarked. The worthy people of Dartmouth like to see their names in print at prestigious events. I'm sure the Herald doesn't pay you to go dancing.
Some of the luminaries of Dartmouth are lucky they don't feature in the court column.
Walter sounded sulky.
Ah, Mr. Cribbs, how very fortuitous.
Inspector Greville loomed up behind Walter.
I wonder if I might have a word.
Kitty had the satisfaction of seeing Walter look a little uncomfortable, the smirk he'd worn since arriving suddenly vanishing from his face.
Anything to oblige the law, Inspector Greville.
How did you hear of the demise of Mr. Fargin? You were at the scene remarkably swiftly.
Walter fidgeted beneath the inspector's gaze.
Newsman's sources are normally sacred, but in this case, I happened to be passing when the delivery lad shot out of the booth and ran into me.
I see. And where were you going when you were just passing?
His eyes suddenly took on a flinty look, and Kitty was glad that she wasn't on the receiving end of that stare.
I was on my way to pick up some provisions. It can be a long day when you're out and about chasing up stories.
Walter's voice held a whiny note.
Alone? Here, what's this about? I came out of my lodgings and walked towards Fargin's booth. I was going to ask him a few questions, but it looked all shut up. So I thought I'd go and get some food from the shop first and see if he was there on the way back. I just got near the booth when the young boy shot out wailing like a banshee.
Inspector Greville raised an eyebrow.
The lad went for help. So what did you do while you were alone with the body?
Kitty's eyes widened.
Nothing, I didn't do nothing. What would I do with old Hubert? I stuck my head in and seen he was dead. All that blood fair turned my stomach. So I come out to take some air and then the lad come back with your constable and he told me to sling my hook.
You didn't search the booth or remove any papers?
No, I told you. It was enough to give anyone the heebie-jeebies seeing Hubert there with that knife in his guts.
The inspector coughed and Walter suddenly appeared to recall that Kitty was present.
Did anyone join you, or did you see anyone before the lad returned with the constable?
Sweat beads formed on Walter's brow.
No, I don't know. People started gathering as I reckon they heard the boy wailing and yelling his way up the street.
Kitty's attention was drawn to a dark brown mark on Walter's cuff as he waved his arms during his narration. There was another stain on the edge of his jacket. Bile churned in her stomach as she realized that Walter must have been right inside the booth to get blood on his clothes. His cuff didn't go unnoticed by Inspector Greville either.
You appear to have blood on your shirt and the edge of your jacket, Mr. Cribbs.
The tips of Walter's ears turned pink.
That was probably done when the boy cannoned into me. I didn't touch nothing in that booth.
What questions did you intend to ask Mr. Fargin?
He'd said something to me about how he thought he knew something about who killed Cora Wakes. He kept hinting, so I thought I'd try and find out if he was telling the truth. I thought some money might persuade him to tell me what he knew. He was fond of money, was Hubert.
And where did you hear the rumour about a valuable duel?
Gossip in the local public house. And a few coins here and there in the right palms.
The inspector's expression looked stonier than ever at Walter's confession of how he obtained his news stories.
You didn't feel you should come forward to the police with any of this information?
It's a big story. I can sell this stuff to the Nationals and make some money, maybe get a byline, or even my ticket to London and the big time.
Walter shuffled his feet.
If I find out you've compromised a crime scene, Mr. Cribbs, or hampered my investigations in any way, I shall be speaking to your employer,
Greville warned.
You may go for now, but I may need to speak with you again.
Walter bolted from the hotel at a less than dignified scuttle.
Ugh, that man.
Kitty gave vent to her feelings with a shudder and saw Inspector Greville hide a smile in his moustache.
I agree, Miss Underhay. Unfortunately, in my experience, it appears to be the nature of certain journalists.
He bade her and Matt farewell and followed Walter Cribbs out of the hotel.
How much did you hear? Kitty asked.
She hadn't noticed Matt join the little group. She had been too busy watching Walter. She wanted to ask him what Vivian and Bobby had said to the inspector.
Enough.
Why didn't you give the inspector the ruby?
I couldn't, not yet. I need some time to think things through.
Matt's face was pale in the fading light. She switched on the green-shaded desk light, creating a golden pool of light in the wood-paneled lobby.
The clouds have gathered outside. It seems to be dark early this evening.
A family party came in to collect their room keys, and she was distracted for a moment dealing with her guests.
Matt, is everything all right?
Something in his demeanor told her something was wrong.
I'm sorry, it's been a very difficult day. I wish you had given him that stone.
His response was unexpected. She was used to the confident Captain Bryant. She suddenly recalled what he'd shared with her about the war, and how in the taxi he had opened the window to cope with the confined space. A warm emotion washed over her.
I'm sorry, it was, I don't know, instinct to keep it.
You shouldn't have gone into that tunnel with Mickey.
She kept her voice low so no one passing might overhear her. A dull flush coloured his cheeks and his spine stiffened.
It was my duty to check it out. Your grandmother has employed me to do a job.
I know, I'm sorry. I was only thinking of you. After seeing Hubert and formally identifying Cora, it can't have been pleasant.
His shoulders drooped slightly.
I'm sorry. You're right. The events of the past week or so have affected me more than I thought they would.
Is there anything I can do?
She reached across the counter and touched his arm in further unspoken support. He moved his arm away as if her fingers had burned him. His gaze met hers and she struggled to read the maelstrom of emotions revealed there.
I'm going to ask you to lock me in my room tonight and to keep the key. If you hear noises, do not come to me. Sometimes when I'm exposed to events such as these, the nightmares come back.
A faint gasp at his request escaped her. His expression was bleak.
I will be perfectly fine. There is nothing anyone can do. By tomorrow, I will be as before.
I understand.
Many men had returned home from the battlefields carrying scars that went far deeper than those visible on their skin. She had had guests at the hotel who had come to convalesce, their wives hoping the quiet peace of the resort would help to heal their shattered minds. Some of those men had also suffered terrifying dreams, or had walked out in the night, one into the cold, inky river. Matt had only hinted at the trauma he had suffered. He had risen to the rank of captain, and her grandmother had said he had a distinguished war record. It seemed that he was still paying the price for his service. That evening, Kitty did as Matt asked and locked him into his room, keeping the key to his door with her. The maids had managed to restore order to her own bedroom, but with the lock smashed, she had decided to sleep in her grandmother's suite until Mickey could make repairs. She arranged with Matt to unlock his door at 8 the next morning. Once in her grandmother's suite, she secured the door and slid a table in front before opening the ancient secret safe that was hidden in the window seat. She held the stone closer to the light. Even in its uncut state, she could see the blood-red luster, and her heartbeat speeded up. Shaking herself mentally, Kitty wrapped the ruby inside a clean, white, lace-edged handkerchief and placed it below the papers relating to her mother's disappearance. Matt was still most unhappy that she hadn't handed it over to Inspector Greville or told him about it. Once all was secure, she took a seat on the cushion at the window and stared out at the river. A fine mist covered the water, and there were a few people out on the street tonight, walking their dogs or heading for the town's hostelries. She shivered and pulled her cardigan more closely around her. Suddenly she missed her mother and grandmother very much. She had no idea what she should do about the ruby. Who was the rightful owner? Was it her father, if he had won it in a poker game? It surely couldn't be worth quite so much money as Walter Cribbs had said. And as she pondered, Kitty's mind kept wandering to Matt, hoping that he was okay. She expected to sleep badly after all that had happened, especially with her concerns for Matt playing on her mind. Instead, she woke with a start when the maid bringing her morning tea rapped at the door, jiggling the lock and asking anxiously if she was all right. Kitty slipped out of bed and pulled on her dressing gown before sliding the table back from the door. Alice stood wide-eyed in front of her, a tray of tea on her trolley.
"Beckon your pardon, Miss Underhay, but the door wouldn't open."
"The lock sticks sometimes. Thank you for the tea." She took the tray and returned inside. Chapter 21. Matt woke that morning to discover his sheets in a crumpled, sweaty heap. He sat up and looked cautiously around the room. Apart from an overturned side table, nothing was smashed or destroyed. He heaved a sigh of relief. He hadn't wanted to scare Kitty, but when the night terrors came upon him, he couldn't remember what happened during those hours. He would wake to find items destroyed, his feet cut and bleeding, and parts of his body bruised or aching. When he had first returned from the front at the end of the war, they had been worse, more violent and frequent. He would dream about Edith, baby Betty, and the Zeppelins, and wake screaming with rage and grief. Only a few people knew his secrets about the dreams, the soul-sucking terror of being trapped in a small space, and about what had happened to Edith. He had remained in the army for several years after the end of the war, travelling around England and Europe, working for the government. But he had been unable to settle in one place, the memories pursuing him like unwelcome ghosts, until he had finally been decommissioned a few months ago. He had accepted this job to please his parents, mainly his mother, who believed that time spent quietly by the sea might help him to settle. He hadn't expected to be thrown into a confusing mystery of murders. There was a light tapping at his door.
"Matt, it's Kitty, are you all right? Do you want me to slide the key under your door?"
"Yes, thank you, everything is fine."
He watched as the key appeared in his room, sliding along the polished boards to stop at the edge of the rug.
"I'll see you later, after breakfast."
"Okay."
He wondered what she'd done with the ruby. At least Kitty had a cool head, and he appreciated how she had been seemingly unfazed by his request for help last night. Hopefully she'd locked it away in a secret safe in her grandmother's suite. He wished she would agree to hand it over to the police, although he could sympathize with why she had held onto it. Outside in the corridor, he heard Mickey talking to someone and guessed it must be the carpenter come to fix Kitty's door. He assumed that whoever had been sleeping in the tunnel hadn't returned as no one had alerted him. If it was the person who had broken into Kitty's room, then perhaps they had given up and decided to leave now there was a police presence. Much as he hoped that might be true, though, he couldn't quite see it. After breakfast, he found Kitty hard at work finalizing the plans for the masked ball.
"Do you have a mask ready for the ball?" she asked.
"Mickey found me one out of the storerooms. He said there were some left in there from the New Year ball."
"Good. I'm hoping this goes well, as it's Vivian's last performance here."
"Are she and Bobby leaving straight away?"
"No, they are staying on for a couple of days to visit Torquay and to see some of the countryside before they head for Plymouth to board the ship. I rather wish I hadn't agreed to that now with everything that's happened."
Kitty pushed the pile of paper she had been working on to one side and sighed.
"Oh, I'm having trouble concentrating today. I still have a policeman in my kitchen annoying my chef, and the carpenter is working on my door."
"Come on then, take a break," he smiled at her.
"What kind of break?"
Her tone held a note of suspicion.
"I want to look at access to the tunnel from below the castle. Mickey said there used to be an entrance there."
Kitty laughed. "There are probably quite a few entrances. The castle grounds used to be much larger than they are now. There are even rumors that there were tunnels in a secret crypt below the church. But I'm not getting on a boat. It's choppy today."
"You don't have to. We can visit the tea rooms at the castle and check it out from there."
The tea rooms had reopened after the war and enjoyed a brisk trade with day trippers.
"True. I won't say no to cake and tea. We can always talk to Pete, the castle caretaker, too, if he's around. He lives in the castle, so he would know if anything odd had been happening."
Kitty collected her hat and handbag.
"I haven't been for tea at the castle for ages."
The rain of the previous evening had left the day feeling fresh but sunny as they strolled along the embankment away from the town, past the old customs house towards the castle. The walk led uphill away from town around Wharfleet Bay past the old lime kilns. The streets were narrow with steep alleyways climbing between the houses into the hills. There appeared to be plenty of other couples with the same idea as they walked to the small entrance leading into the tea room. Matt studied the tea room with interest. It was larger than he'd expected, nestled as it was inside the sturdy ancient stone walls of the castle. The tea room occupied the top floor of the turret, with the entrance opening onto the upper level where the castle was built into the hillside. Dark oak tables were covered with lace-edged cloths. The walls were whitewashed, and a few black and white framed photographs of views of the coast hung on the walls. Outside, there were a few tables positioned to take advantage of the view of the river. They took a seat at one of the smaller tables inside and gave their order to the young waitress, smart in her black dress and white cap and apron.
"Is this what you were expecting?"
Kitty drew off her gloves and placed them neatly on top of her handbag. Matt looked around.
"I don't know.
I really want to take a look around to see if the tunnel might be visible from the far side of the castle."
Kitty shrugged. "I expect not. It's below water at high tide and well hidden. There are more tunnels near Kingsware Castle Tower on the opposite side of the river. Lots of them are lost now or unusable. During the war, everything was closed off."
The waitress returned with their order, and as the girl made to move away, Kitty stopped her.
"Do you know if Pete, the caretaker, is here today?"
"I dunno, miss. I'll ask for you. Is there a problem, miss?"
The girl looked worried.
"No, no problem at all. I just need some information, and I know he has a wealth of knowledge about the castle."
A relieved smile lit the girl's face.
"I'll go ask, miss."
"Pete lives in as caretaker. He's a veteran like you. He helped man the defences here during the war. He knows my grandmother well."
A few minutes later, an older man with a slight limp appeared at the table.
"Miss Underhay, how can I help you? Is your grandmother well?"
"Quite well, thank you, Pete. Captain Bryant here was inquiring about the tunnels that led from the castle. I think they link with the one at the rear of the Dolphin."
Matt noticed he was back to being Captain Bryant again. Pete scratched his head,
pushing his cap slightly to the side as he did so.
"They tunnels is mostly lost, miss. There is one that still works."
"The one from the sea?" Matt asked.
"Yes, sir. That one, I think, is still open. It did have a metal grid over it, but I think it may have been lost in a storm last spring."
"Do you know of any others?" Matt asked.
Pete screwed his face up in thought. "There used to be some as opened up in the hills just outside the castle boundary, but I heard as the farmer had closed 'em in."
"I don't suppose you've seen or heard any boats lately, near where the tunnel opening would be, have you?" Kitty asked.
"Can't say as I have, miss. Do you think someone is back smuggling again? Or spying?"
Pete's gaze sharpened.
"No. My grandmother has a door closing off the tunnel at our end, which she keeps locked, and it looks as if someone has been trying to get inside."
Kitty told a half-truth.
"'Twould probably be children messing about."
"I'm sure you're right, Pete. I just wanted to check. If you do hear or see anything odd, though, please send a message to Captain Bryant at the Dolphin."
Pete nodded.
"That I will, Miss Underhay."
He shook hands with Kitty and Matt and left.
"You realize he thinks I'm on some covert military detail?"
Matt eyed Kitty as she took a sip of tea.
"No doubt, but Pete is a good, honest soul and a patriot."
After finishing their tea, they strolled out onto the top of the castle to look over at the sea.
"The tide is in, so you can't see the tunnel."
Kitty shaded her eyes with her hand. "How old were you during the war, Kitty?" Matt asked.
"I was 4 when it started. My mother disappeared when I was 6. You must have been young yourself."
He was silent for a moment, trying not to remember.
"Not as young as you, but too young. 14, almost 15.
"What happened, Matt? Who is Edith?"
He shook his head.
"I'm sorry, Kitty. I can't talk about her, not here, not yet."
She placed a gloved hand on his arm.
"Come, we should get back to the hotel."
The walk back to the hotel was silent. Matt was lost in his own thoughts, and Kitty appeared content to allow him to be quiet. The Dolphin's wide, half-timbered frontage dominated the street scene. The carved wooden grey-painted dolphin sign creaked gently in the breeze from the river high above their heads. The glass in the diamond-leaded panes twinkled in the sunshine. Matt stole a peep at Kitty. He wondered if running the hotel would have been her choice had she been free to make it. Maybe Eloed had run away from her destiny after all, although he feared that Kitty and her grandmother's instincts were correct and that Eloed was long dead. If Eloed had planned to get away, why leave the ruby behind, and her daughter?
"Post, Miss Underhay."
The girl at the reception desk passed a small bundle of letters to Kitty as she entered the lobby. He waited as she flicked through the pile, instinct telling him to stay close. He saw her frown at one particular envelope.
"Kitty?"
She glanced at him.
"I think we should open this upstairs."
He joined her as they hurried up the wide, polished oak staircase to the first floor. Kitty unlocked the door to her grandmother's suite and crossed to the bureau. She dropped the other letters down before pulling off her gloves and taking up a small gilded paper knife.
"I don't recognize the writing, and it has been hand-delivered."
She waved the envelope at him so he could see there was no stamp. She carefully slit the top of the envelope open and drew out the thin sheet of paper from inside. Immediately he could see it was unlike the other anonymous one-line letters. This one had a full page of writing and what appeared to be a small photograph enclosed in its folds. Kitty sank down onto the sofa, the photograph tumbling onto her lap as her eyes scanned the letter.
"What is it?" Matt asked.
"It's so strange. I don't know what to say."
Her eyes glistened with unshed tears as she picked up the photograph from her lap. She blinked as she studied it and shook her head fiercely as if to clear her thoughts. She passed the picture to him.
My mother.
He studied the photograph. It had clearly been taken some time ago and was battered and creased. Eloed appeared a similar age to Kitty now. It was a formal studio portrait, with Eloed seated in front of what appeared to be a photographer's backdrop of a classical Greek scene with columns. In her hands was a large bouquet of lilies. He flipped it over. On the back was written, "My beautiful bride on our wedding." "The letter is from Edgar." He passed the photograph back to Kitty. She nodded.
"It would seem so." He enclosed the picture to prove himself genuine.
Matt waited for her to continue. He longed to take the letter and read what Edgar Underhay had to say to the child he had abandoned, but he waited for Kitty to compose herself. Kitty dabbed her eyes with a small lace-edged handkerchief before picking up the letter once more and reading it aloud to Matt.
"My dear daughter, I hope I might still claim to call you this despite our long separation. I was deeply shocked when I learned only recently of the loss of your mother. I must ask you to believe me when I say I knew nothing of this, or the circumstances surrounding her disappearance. I had believed her to be safe with you at your grandmother's hotel. I realize that you may find my correspondence unwelcome, especially after so much time has passed. I have only lately returned to England, having been in America for several years. I had reason to believe correspondence would have been unwelcome, so, to my shame, I did not write to you. I enclose a photograph of your mother to prove my authenticity. It is one which I have carried with me since our wedding. I understand that you may not wish to see me or hear from me, but I greatly fear that my coming to Dartmouth may have inadvertently placed you in some danger. This is why I have not yet come forward openly to meet you in person, as I had first intended. Your mother had in her keeping something of mine of great value, and I have been double-crossed by a person whom I trusted in my endeavors to regain it and to reconnect with you. My dear, I beg you to keep safe and to engage with someone who you can trust to protect you. I do not know if you have discovered the jewel. If you have, then please ensure it is locked up safely and in secret. I hope to try to contact you in person to explain myself further, but I dare not place either you or, to be frank, myself in any more danger. If you do not wish to see or hear more from me, then I will understand, but I cannot emphasize enough how serious the situation is in which I find myself, and in which I have inadvertently placed you. If you will agree to further communication, I ask you to place a vase of red roses in the window of your grandmother's room visible from the street, and I will contact you. Please take care, my dear child. I could not bear to think of you coming to any harm through some fault of mine. Your father, Edgar Underhay."
Kitty's voice cracked as she read the last line.
"What do I do now, Matt?"
Chapter 22. Matt paced about the room, thinking hard about the contents of Kitty's letter.
"Well, that's a turn up for the books, old girl."
The phrase slipped out. Kitty was busy rereading the missive once more.
"I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do about this letter or about the ruby."
She dropped the letter and picked up the photograph once more. "You look very much like your mother," Matt remarked. She touched the corner of the battered image with a tender fingertip.
"I don't know. What do you want to do, Kitty?"
He waited for her reply. He knew what they should do, hand everything over to Inspector Greville, including the blasted ruby. But it wasn't his call to make. All he could do was try to keep Kitty safe.
"If I give the letter and ruby to Inspector Greville, my father could well be in more danger. For that matter, so could I. The ruby is my first tangible link to my parents and might be the key to my mother's disappearance.
Her tone was troubled. Kitty, I know it is a difficult thing to think, but you must face facts. We don't know who killed Mr. Blass, Cora, or Hubert Fargin. And I admit, I am worried about the interest this person has in you.
She sighed and placed the letter and photograph on the bureau. I know my father is a rogue and a coward. His own words more or less admit to that. But I cannot think him capable of violence.
You wish to place the roses in the window? Matt asked. She nodded slowly.
I wish to solve this puzzle. I wish to actually see my father face to face. He must have had that photograph with him all these years. I want to hear from him why he stayed away.
I understand.
And in a strange way, he did.
He wanted to find out who had killed Blass, Cora, and Hubert, and hopefully assist Inspector Greville in bringing them to justice. But he also understood the longing to fill an empty space in a heart left by someone who was missing.
I shall send out for some red roses, and then we shall wait to see what happens.
Kitty stood and unlocked the bureau, slipping the letter and photograph inside.
We say nothing of this to Inspector Greville, not yet.
Her worried gaze met Matt's.
Very well, if you are certain. You know I have concerns about this, though. I made a promise to your grandmother to keep you safe, and that did not include looking after a priceless ruby.
A slight smile lifted the corners of Kitty's lips.
I know, and I promise I shall not be reckless.
Matt wished he could believe her.
She followed her father's instructions and placed a large vase of flowers on a small side table in the bay window of her grandmother's suite, sending Matt outside to check that it was visible from the street. And now we wait, she said.
It will be dark in a few hours. I don't expect he will contact you again today. If he is as concerned as he said about your safety and his own, I'm expecting it to be a fleeting meet-up when you probably least expect it.
Kitty sighed.
I expect you're right.
The evening was a busy one. Vivian Delaware had proved to be a huge success during her engagement at the hotel, and it was late by the time the last of the guests had retired to their beds and the visitors had all departed the hotel. Vivian appeared to be in no mood to chat with either Kitty or Matt, and she, Bobby, and the musicians all left the ballroom as soon as their performance was finished. Matt accompanied Kitty to the lobby to ascertain that the night porter was at his station and observing for anything untoward.
Is the poor constable still on duty in the kitchen? Kitty asked in a low tone, out of earshot of the night porter.
Yes, Greville is leaving someone here for a few days.
Matt personally felt happier knowing there was some kind of police presence in the hotel. Kitty had to be safer with extra security.
I'm going to pop into the kitchen and get some hot milk to take upstairs.
If you make it cocoa, then I'll join you.
Matt smiled at her.
They made their way along the corridor companionably, quietly warning the constable stationed in the gloom next to the large pantry door that they were coming to make drinks.
Kitty offered to make the constable some cocoa too.
She left the main light turned off, relying on light from the corridor to see by. She had barely had time to tip some milk into the pan when Matt took hold of her arm, stilling the movement.
Look!
The constable rose from his seat, and they looked towards the door in the cliff face, all of them scarcely daring to breathe. The door had opened a fraction. Someone was inside the tunnel. The constable swore they hadn't entered via the door, but were clearly about to exit that way. Matt touched the constable's sleeve and gestured towards the rear door to the kitchen, which stood unlatched. He and the police officer edged slowly and carefully towards the door. Kitty followed them. In the moonlight, they watched the tunnel door open further and a shadowy face peep out. Matt held his breath. The next move was crucial.
If the man were to see them, or if they moved too soon, he could dart back inside and be gone. A cold shiver danced along his spine at the thought of possibly having to enter the tunnels again, especially in the dark. For what felt like an eternity, nothing happened. Then the door to the tunnel opened wider, and the slight figure of a man emerged. The man glanced about as if to check the coast was clear, and then darted towards the gate. Before Matt could prevent him, the constable let out a blast on his whistle and charged through the back door of the kitchen. The man they were chasing startled and ran back into the tunnels. Matt groaned aloud, and, cursing under his breath, he followed the broad shoulders of the constable as he charged after their quarry. "Matt!" Kitty raced behind him, her heels clicking on the paving stones. "Take this." He paused to accept the large metal torch she handed him.
"Stay here. Go inside and telephone Greville."
He shouted the instruction to her as he switched on the torch and followed the constable inside the cliff face. Darkness enveloped him as soon as he entered the tunnel, and the door swung shut behind him. He was thankful for Kitty's quick thinking, as the yellow light of the torch lit his way as he followed the constable along the narrow tunnel. Up ahead in the dark, he heard the rapid, scrabbling footsteps of the man they were hunting. Soon they were in the cave where he and Mickey had discovered the blankets. He swung the torch around, looking for any other exits, but only saw the one that Mickey had said led to the sea below the castle. This time Matt led the way, with the policeman behind him. He listened as he went forward for any sounds of their quarry. The air smelt damp and briny, and his heart pounded hard against the wall of his chest as they ventured deeper into the cliff. Just as Matt was beginning to feel the walls of the tunnel closing around him, it suddenly widened out and forked. Matt breathed a sigh as he tried to fight the terror in his mind by considering the options before them. One branch of the tunnel led downwards, and the other, much smaller, swerved away up and to the right. The fugitive had a head start, and Matt played the torch around the ground and walls, searching for clues as to the direction he might have taken.
"I can't hear him," the constable said.
Matt could barely hear anything beyond the sound of his own blood rushing in his ears.
"I doubt he came in by boat. Let's try this way."
He took the path leading upward, and against every survival instinct he possessed, led the way further into the complex. As they worked their way along, the tunnel grew narrower, and Matt found his shoulders scraping against the side of the passage. Up ahead, he thought he could hear the man they were chasing.
"Sir, I can't get no further."
Matt glanced behind him to see the policeman's burly frame prohibited him from making further progress. He swallowed.
"Can you go back, check on Miss Underhay, and tell any others where I've gone?" "Yes, sir. I have some matches in my pocket to light the way."
The police officer began to work his way backwards down the tunnel. Matt took a deep breath and continued on his way. He forced himself to concentrate on the task at hand, to push aside the horrific memories taunting him at the edge of his mind. Memories of Flanders mud, heavy and sticky, falling, pressing against the wall of his chest, filling his nose and mouth. The rocky walls began to give way to soil, damp and earthy smelling. Long, pale roots, white in the torchlight, dangled from the ceiling and brushed against his hair. Every now and then he thought he heard scrabbling sounds from up ahead and hoped it was his quarry. A shower of dirt and small stones rattled down on his face, and he almost dropped the torch. He wanted to be sick. Surely the tunnel had to open out soon. Even as the thought crossed his mind, the space closed in even further, so he was forced to drop onto his stomach and crawl. By the torchlight, he could see leaves ahead of him, smell green air, and could feel the cool of the night on his face. He wriggled forward, hoping the man he had been pursuing wasn't hiding just ahead, about to attack. Finally, he emerged through what seemed to be the entrance to a badger's set, into the vast open slopes of a field just outside the castle walls. His eyes took a moment to adjust to the moonlight as he looked around for the man he had been following. A hedgerow lay in shadow, and he shone the torch, trying to see if his quarry might be lying hidden there. But there was no sign. Matt sank down on his knees on the grass, so thankful to be outside the tunnels and alive. He supposed it would be a long and difficult walk back into the town through the woods, but he simply couldn't face returning to the dolphin the way he had emerged. Slowly, he began to follow the hedgerow line, taking care over the uneven ground beneath his feet, until he came to a gate and made his way towards the small stone-built Devon longhouse. His approach set the farm dogs barking, and in response, a light came on inside the building. Kitty had telephoned the police station as soon as Matt had disappeared inside the tunnel. She waited anxiously in the kitchen for any signs of either Matt or the constable emerging back into the yard. Her patience was rewarded after about half an hour when the police officer came out.
"What happened? Where is Captain Bryant?"
Her heart raced. The constable's uniform was torn and dirty. She led him to the kitchen and put on the kettle, trying to calm herself by keeping busy and being purposeful.
"Captain Bryant is still in pursuit, miss. The tunnel was too narrow for me to get through, so he carried on by himself. He asked me to return and stay with you, miss."
The policeman sank down on a kitchen chair, clearly shaken by the pursuit.
"It's dark as pitch in those tunnels. Can't see a hand in front of you."
"I've telephoned the police station. Your colleagues should be here soon. Did you see the man at all? Where did you go?"
At least Matt had the torch with him, but that thought was of little comfort. The constable told her about the journey through the tunnel and their theory that the man had escaped via the land route.
"Matt could be anywhere. He could be in mortal danger."
She knew the tunnel would be his worst nightmare, and to go on alone after the fugitive was brave beyond belief. He would suffer terribly from the adventure. For 2 pins, she would have set off along the tunnels herself if she thought she could help.
"Miss Underhay, Constable Jones, would you care to tell me what has been happening?"
Inspector Greville entered the room, escorted by the night porter. Chapter 23. Exhaustion washed over Kitty, draining her of any remaining energy she had when the telephone call finally came to say that Matt was safe. Inspector Greville sent a car to collect him from Highcastle Farm. By the time he arrived back at the hotel, the first pinky-coloured streaks of dawn were staining the sky, and the birds had begun to sing.
"Captain Bryant, I understand you were lucky Farmer Dykes didn't discharge his shotgun at you,"
Inspector Greville remarked as Matt entered the hotel lobby, looking tired and dishevelled. Dirt clung to his suit, and he had a scratch mark on his left cheek.
"I think he thought I was a fox after the hens at first. It was a close thing to convince him I was not a tramp about to rob his household."
He sank down on a nearby chair. Kitty passed him the tumbler of whiskey she had prepared for him.
"No sign of your quarry?"
Matt shook his head.
"No, sir. He obviously knew those tunnels and the lay of the land well. By the time I managed to get into the field, he was gone."
Greville sighed deeply.
"I think we can most probably assume our man is Colin Wakes. It has to be someone local to know the layout of those tunnels so well. Did you get a good look at him? Constable Jones said he couldn't see clearly in the moonlight."
"Only a glance, I'm afraid. Constable Jones and I were some distance away, and it was quite dark. He is a thin man, shorter than average, thin face and narrow moustache. That's all I can tell you, sir."
He swallowed a gulp of whiskey. The inspector glanced at his watch.
"That certainly fits Wakes's description. For now, though, I think we should all get some rest. It's been a long night.
We will carry on the search for Colin Wakes, as there must be some reason why he is so anxious to avoid coming into contact with the police and is lurking about inside the old smugglers' tunnels.
He donned his hat and bade them all a good morning. The night porter set about his morning duties, leaving Kitty alone with Matt in the lobby.
"How are you?"
she asked, keeping her voice low.
"Glad to be away from the tunnels,"
he grimaced as he spoke.
Kitty bit back a yawn. "I'm sorry, I need to get some sleep. Can I get you anything else?"
He finished his whiskey.
"No. Thank you for the drink."
"Will you be all right?"
she asked as he stood to ascend the stairs with her. She hoped his ordeal wouldn't trigger another bout of night terrors.
"I'll survive."
He gave her a brief smile, and she had to be content with his response. Preparations for Vivian's final performance and the masked ball took up the next few days, and Kitty threw herself into it to distract herself from frustration with the lack of progress in the case. The police continued their efforts, but Colin Wakes appeared to have vanished. Kitty kept expecting to receive further contact from her father, but nothing happened, although she continued to keep the vase of roses in full view. Her grandmother and her great-aunt had set off from Scotland, but wouldn't arrive until after the ball, as Livy had been told she must have frequent stops on the journey. Vivian and Bobby continued to keep a low profile. Kitty only saw them when Vivian appeared to give her nightly performances. Much to Kitty's frustration, Matt continued to monitor her every move, both inside the hotel and whenever she went out, often finding excuses to accompany her.
"I'm starting to feel as if we're an old married couple," she complained as he insisted on walking with her to the post office.
His eyebrow quirked and the corner of his mouth lifted. "Then I'm sure you'll agree I'd make you a most attentive husband."
She scowled as he strolled along beside her, as if he had all the time in the world. She wondered if he had ever been a husband, if that was the personal tragedy that had marked his life, perhaps the mysterious Edith.
"I need to call at the market for a few things."
She set off towards the ancient covered butter walk, which lay away from the river behind the main streets.
"I don't think I've seen the market," Matt remarked, and fell into step beside her as they passed under the overhanging upper stories of the building supported by stone columns, past the shop windows.
The market was small but busy, with stalls laden with all kinds of goods. Vegetables, fish, ironmongery and haberdashery all jostled for position and for customers. She completed her purchases, stowing the packages in the large wicker basket she carried over one arm, and they were about to walk back to the hotel when Matt touched her elbow.
"Look there."
She glanced in the direction he indicated. To her surprise, Bobby was deep in conversation with Walter Cribbs. Matt drew her to the side of the footpath so they weren't blocking the way. As they watched, Bobby drew a brown manila envelope from inside the breast of his jacket and passed it to Walter before hurrying away.
"Well, wasn't that strange?" Matt remarked.
"What do you think was in that envelope?" Kitty asked.
Matt shrugged.
"Money? Information? Walter Cribbs is such a sly character, anything is possible."
"Do you think he may have taken something from Hubert Fargen's booth that he is blackmailing Bobby and Vivian over? He admitted he went in there, and we are fairly certain he lied to Inspector Greville."
Bobby and Vivian both seemed quite shaken up when Greville interviewed them. "If anybody is under suspicion, I would have thought it would be Bobby. Vivian draws crowds wherever she goes due to her appearance, so she can hardly have managed to murder Cora or Hubert without someone seeing her. Bobby, on the other hand, who knows?"
Kitty frowned as she pondered the information. "Why, though? What motive would they have? They weren't here either when Mr. Blass was killed."
"I have been thinking about this,"
And I believe Vivian and Bobby are here under instructions to try and retrieve that ruby. Bobby admitted that their next singing engagement was back in Chicago, and it sounded as if it was for a mob-owned club. Or they could be after it for themselves, of course.
I suppose that makes a horrid kind of sense. If they recognized my father in London, they could have told someone who they knew was looking for him. It's not so far from London to here by train or motor vehicle, and Bobby arrived later than Vivian.
Exactly, Matt said.
I'll be glad when the masked ball is over. A few more days and they'll be gone back to America. I wish now I hadn't said they could stay for the extra couple of days before they are due to board their ship.
It's strange that the transfer of the envelope wasn't the other way around, Matt said.
Oh yes, I see what you mean. Walter has already admitted that he pays for information, so you would think it would be Walter paying Bobby.
It was strange. A shudder ran down her spine. Walter was so untrustworthy, and the way he always looked at her made her blood run cold. When he had made unwelcome advances at the Christmas ball under the mistletoe, she had been forced to physically stamp on his foot to elude his clutches.
As they arrived on the embankment,